Everybody, welcome to this week's exciting edition of Blind Like Me. I'd love to be an announcer. I'd like to be a sportsman. Good evening, sport fans. You know, wouldn't it be wonderful? But blind guys don't get to do ball games, but we do get to do Blind Like Me. And here's a fella that that I've never shaken hands with, but I called him last night to do to engage him to do a Blind Like Me today, and we should have taken 5 minutes. We talked an hour, so he's just a friend that I've never met. And we have a lot in common. Both of us are audio nuts, and so are a lot of you, so maybe you'll understand if we talk a little audio. Tim Cummings, welcome to Blind Like Me, sir.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Phil.
Well, it's good to have you, and it's good to meet you. It's good to know you, and it's your enthusiasm infects me. Yes, I'll learn your go away if that's what you want me to do. Yes, sir, I sure will. That's what we're talking about, learning computers, blind people learning computers, and you're a... You're a whiz. You know computers pretty well, right?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think I know them pretty well, and I meet somebody who knows a lot more than I do. So I'm still learning, just like everybody else.
You always want to be around people who know something more than you do. How can we learn if we? It was always my criteria. Radio station. Most radio stations, people are afraid to hire somebody that's better than they are. I never was. I always thought I could probably learn something from him. Maybe, you know, I would be a better at what I do. Now, what do you do for a living?
I work in customer service for NSTAR, which used to be Boston Edison, which is the local power company up here.
Oh, so if somebody calls with a complaint, do you do that, or do you?
I do some of that. I do more of the moving calls. So if you're moving from Lufkin to Dallas or someplace, and you got to close your account and open a new account, I get that all set up for you. And this actually is our busiest time between June and September because I'm up here in Boston, and of course Boston is a huge mecca for students. So we have a lot of students moving in and out, and this is our busiest time. We probably take. In the whole call center, we probably take between 5,000 and 8,000 calls a day.
5,000 and 8,000 calls a day?
A day. Yes.
How many of those do you handle?
I probably take, on the busy days, 100.
Now, you say company just serve Boston or what?
Oh, no. We kind of merged a couple of years ago, so we actually. We serve Boston and a lot of the surrounding towns, 50 surrounding towns and cities, plus we serve a lot of towns now on the Cape Cod. Uh-huh. So we have a couple million customers, so it can get pretty crazy.
And so if you take 100 calls a day and several thousand come in, there must be several hundred people doing this,
we're actually down. But I think we've got about 100 people now at the call center taking calls. So that's on a busy day. Like for example, Mondays, and a lot of people will tell you this who work in customer service. Yeah. The worst time to call probably is on a Monday or a Friday, because on a Monday it's the beginning of the week. Everyone wants to get their stuff done, so they're all calling. And on a Friday, everyone's going away for the weekend, so they want to get their stuff done, so they're calling. So those are probably two of the busiest days of the week.
All right, that's good. That's good to know. Are you the only blind person there doing this?
I am the only blind person there doing this. In fact, I think I'm the only at this point the only blind person in the company. So, and I've been doing this for about 11 years.
Well, obviously you do it well. You've been there 11 years. Have they They ought to hire some other blind folks or whatever.
I think they've talked about it. I think now they're in the whole downsizing arena.
Yeah.
They're trying not to hire new people. And of course, the other thing you hear about call centers is a lot of places you'll call now. Dallas or some places, you'll either be talking to somebody in India or somebody in the Philippines. Those seem to be the two big places for call centers.
Yeah. Did you hear the show with the Gaswins on? They're doing Marriott, I think, Marriott Hotels.
I didn't hear that. I'm going to go back and listen to that. But I have heard the woman on who works for the big hardware place.
Yeah, she works for Home Depot. Linda Justice. She works for Home Depot, and she's just such a wonderful person. I hope she comes in November. I don't know whether she is or not, but I'd like to see them come. Her husband is a hell of a musician. He could help us out. He's a real keyboard player, as opposed to you and me, who just kind of fool with one.
This is true.
Now, you've been doing this 11 years. You are totally blind.
Yes, sir.
And your wife is totally blind also.
Yes, sir.
So there are no eyes in Tim's house.
No, not except when we have our readers or our volunteers come over. No, there are no eyes in my house.
No eyes in your house. Well, there are none in mine today because I'm the only one here. My wife is out of town. You know, it's really funny. Just a little aside. I want to be alone until I am. Then I'm going, nobody loves me. I was really looking forward to this. Just was great because I thought, oh, man, I got 3-4 days by myself. Do what I want to. Drink all I want to. Eat anything I want to. And this afternoon I'm going, well, what am I going to do when Tim and I hang up? I want everybody to talk to you. That's just
right.
Pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you got Frankie.
I got Frankie and Johnny. You're right about that. They're both, and Frankie's a handful. She's about 80 pounds.
Yeah.
And so you were. How did you get blind? You born this way?
Yes, I was. You've had other guests who've had the same condition. Used to be called RLF, and now it's called retinopathy of prematurity. I was 3.5 months premature.
Yeah, and they gave me too much oxygen.
Exactly. And I'm 41 years old, so that'll give you. I was born in 63, so.
We have had an inordinate amount of guests on who just had that exact same thing, and it's funny because I never knew about it until I started doing this.
Yeah, between, I think, the early 50s and probably from then up until probably the early 60s, it was a pretty common occurrence. And then they discovered it, and you find less of it now. Though once in a while, you still hear about it.
Yeah. The deal is, if they didn't give you the oxygen, you'd die. But if they did, you might lose your eyesight.
That's right. So I'd rather be alive and blind than dead. So
yeah. There have been times in my life when I didn't feel like that.
Well, this is true too.
But this, no matter how lonely I get this afternoon, this ain't gonna be one of them. I can tell you that. Yes, I'm having the best time of my life doing this. What I'm doing now. And so you started out life as a totally brothers and sisters.
I have three brothers. I have I'm number three. So I have two older brothers and a younger brother.
They all see perfectly, right?
Yes, they're all perfectly sighted.
But did they include you pretty much as a youngster?
We did a lot of things. You've talked to a lot of people about riding a bike, and my parents really had a neat way to teach me to ride a bike. What we would do is we'd go on a Sunday.
Uh-huh.
This was back here in Boston when stores weren't open on Sunday. We'd go to a shopping center. And I would just ride around the parking lot on my bike, and they'd stand just in different places just to give me voice cues so I wouldn't run into anything. And that's how I learned to ride a bike.
That's pretty cool. You just take off riding on this bike because there'd be no cars in the parking lot.
Take off riding around the parking lot. And then later on, my parents bought an old tandem bike, and so we used to go do tandem rides, one of these old 60-pounders.
Well, would you be the front guy or the back guy?
I was the stoker. I was in the back.
You were in the back. You were pedaling, and somebody up front was guiding.
Exactly.
I thought they might have told you which way to go. And I guess nobody had that much nerve. I've driven a car or two, people telling me which way to turn. I wouldn't do it now, but of course, cars are so busy. But back when you could do silly things like that.
Yeah, well, you know.
Back in the good old days. Here we are reminiscing. You're just 41, you know.
I know. I'm a youngster, but that's all right.
You are. That's good. So, and so you learned to ride a bike, and I guess you had the same echolocation system that the rest of us do. You know,
I did, but I didn't even know where I was. I used it until I got into school, and my mobility teacher said to me one day, she said, she, because they used to follow you out on routes, and she said, why are you whistling when you're walking? I said, I'm not whistling. She said, she said, you're clicking your tongue. You're using echolocation. And I was doing it unconsciously. I wasn't even aware of it.
You're going.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do it. All blind people do it. That's so you can hear if there's anything in front of you.
That's right.
But you aren't aware of it. Unless you stop and think about it.
It's just,
it comes second nature to you. You know, if I don't do this, I might run into something.
So, that's right.
You know, it's just, and I guess if they followed you on your, they taught you, did they teach you some, what, first of all, what blind school did you go to, or did you go to blind school?
I didn't. I want to elaborate on this a little bit, because I know you've had this discussion on your program, and
I think it's
a very interesting one. I went to public school. But I was a little different than the kids who are mainstream today. There's a big debate going on about mainstream versus residential schools, and you've had this on your program. I think I had the best of both worlds, because the program that I was in, I lived in Winchester, which is a town outside of about 8 miles north of Boston.
Uh-huh.
And I went to school in a town a couple towns away called Medford, Massachusetts, and they had a resource program. And so part of the day I spent in the resource room learning Braille and learning how to use a slate and stylus and an abacus and all that kind of stuff. And then the rest of the day I spent in the regular classroom with the rest of the students. So I think I had the best of both worlds, because I get all the training that I needed, but I was also in the regular classroom. And the older I got, the less time I spent in the resource room and more time I spent in the regular classroom. And then when I was my last year of junior high school, ninth grade, I switched back to the Winchester school system and was able, the junior high was right 3 blocks from my house, so I was able to walk, the one and only time I was able to walk to school, which was great.
So you walked to school on your own?
I walked to school.
That's really cool.
Took me 10 minutes, and, it was nice because I could stay after, there was a high school musical, and I was a junior high musical, and I was in that, so I could stay after school to do that and wouldn't have to worry about, getting a ride home and all this kind of stuff. So it really worked out well. So by the time I got into the Winchester school system for my last year of junior high and high school, I'd been around sighted kids all my life, but I also had all the skills that I needed. So I didn't, need that much of a resource room.
You didn't need that resource class anymore. You knew Braille.
No, I knew. I had an itinerant teacher who came a couple times a week to either, Braille stuff up for me or whatever. But it was a very positive situation. I know for other people it hasn't been. And a lot of kids now have aides that go to the classes with them and do everything for them. I think that's just a total disaster. But I think I had a very good situation. And I think they should bring back the resource program, because I think the concept is a very good one.
Oh yeah,
because it gives blind kids the best of both worlds.
We had somebody else on that did sort of a similar kind of thing. Maybe Karen Applegren. She just went to public school, and I don't think they had resources. I think they just. Maybe they did. But anyway, she went all to public school. We've had several on who've gone, but you had a very nice situation. But, of course, the one thing, you didn't know any other blind people, did you?
Well, I did, Phil, because the program that I was in elementary school and my first couple years of junior high, we had blind kids from all over Eastern Mass. So there were 7 blind kids in my program with me.
Okay.
So I did. So I did know them. And just as to give you an idea, and this I think this says a good thing about the program, of all the kids that the blind kids that I was in school with and went through school with, the contemporaries with me, all of them are working today. All of them have jobs, so that's something to be said for that.
They claim that we're 70% either under or unemployed or underemployed.
Correct.
I don't think that's true, but anyway, so all the kids, the 5 or 6 kids that you went to school with, are all contributing to society, working.
Yes, sir.
And I didn't mean that people who aren't working aren't contributing to society.
No, that's correct. I understand that. But I mean, I think it's, you know, I think the whole thing of education, I think there are a lot of people who, when they look at the public school situation now, they're throwing up their hands and they're saying, well, see, you know, I told you we should go back to residential schools, and I just don't think you can. I just don't think you can go back.
Well, I don't think we would want to. Who would, you know, I don't know who would advocate. Is most of the people very, well, I'd say not most of the people, but a good number of the people had the experience like I did. It was a bad experience at a residential. So, I mean, they jerk you up when you're 6 years old and take you 200 miles from home with, you know, 25 other blind kids and a house mother who really doesn't give a damn about blind kids. How could it be a good experience?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, there are people that have had good experiences, and I know, you know, like I said, there are positives. I think there's a lot of other things. I think it's a much more complicated situation. I think it's a lot of it is family support, and a lot of it is, you know, there's so many other factors that go into it.
Well, you obviously had a very supportive family.
I did.
Because they could have just sent you to the Massachusetts.
They could have sent me to Perkins, but they didn't really want to do that. They could have done that, but they didn't. And you know, that's been a big big success for me.
And Perkins is one of the better schools, one of the better known, at least.
It is, but it's changed. I mean, if you ask them their demographics, you won't find too many kids at Perkins anymore who are just who blindness is their only disability.
Yeah, yeah, they're multi-handicapped.
Multiple, yeah.
And I think some with some maybe little mental problems of some kind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it isn't just blind kids anymore. We were discussing that the other day at the School for the Blind in Texas. Is there are very few just, I guess we can say that, just blind like we are.
Right, exactly.
It's poor boy's only blind.
That's it.
He can still walk and do things. But that's good that all those kids are working. Minutes, 12 seconds. You hear my Radio Shack watch?
Yes, sir.
I love it. So let's just take a little break, and then we want to get you in high school, see what you did there, and what your education after school was. Back in a minute with more of this week's Blind Like Me.
And I will be waiting there just for you. For you.
That lady singing so nice, I hate to interrupt her, but let me just mention our little gathering that we're having in November. If you don't know about it, I don't know how you could listen to these shows and not know about it. We are getting together in November to do the 100th Blind Handyman Show. That's our other show that we do, assuming that you have heard that. Well, we're going to do show 100 in November at the, now the name escapes me. Anyway, Sheraton Hotel in Houston, Texas. And it's a Sheraton North. It's out by the big airport, by the Intercontinental Airport, where most people will land. If you didn't land, however, I happen to think there is a shuttle between those two airports. Anyway, we're starting November 5th. We're coming in on Friday, November 5th. We're going to do November 5th and the 6th. We're going to have some motivational speakers. So Henry Caston is the only one I have lined up. We're working on maybe bringing Carmen in from California, but I don't forget I have the money to do that. Anyway, Don and I are both going to give a little talk and some of our history and some things we've done. Henry's going to talk to you, and we have some folks from Houston Taping that are going to come and visit with us. All in all, we'll kill Saturday just talking about blind things. If you want to come and talk to us, well, we'd love to have you. Anyway, that'll be Saturday. Saturday night, we're going to try to play some music and sing some karaoke and just have a little general party. Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, we're going to tape a record, and not tape, we'll digitally record the 100th Blind Handyman Show. We've done 100 of those by then. Sunday afternoon, we're going to have some demonstrations of several things like Gold Wave, the new PlexTalk recorder. I don't know what all, but several things Sunday afternoon. If you have some piece of gear you'd like to demonstrate, I want to demonstrate also this little talking book reader that I've got. It's called Bookport. You may not have seen one of those. Anyway, demonstrations of blind things. Sunday night, a little music, karaoke, a little party. Monday morning, go home, back home. So, all in all, a fun weekend. If you're interested, give me a call at 936-634-9500. Or you can email me at philpar, that's just P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, at txucom.net. Well, we're back with section two, or part two, or whatever you call it. The Car Talk guys say they've got their split their show into three halves now.
That's right, three halves.
They're taking a break, and that's what we do. We do an hour, but we do three halves. So, Tim Cummings from Boston, Mass. is with us. You live in Boston proper?
I do. Actually, I live in Brighton, which is part of Boston. So, close enough for horseshoes.
For government work, I suppose.
Yeah.
And what did you say? Let's talk about high school a little bit. You were in a normal, regular public school with the band and all that. What sort of things did you do in high school?
I did. I didn't do band in high school. I actually did band in junior high. I did stage band. And in high school, I was, I was in the French club because I studied French. And I had a lot of, a lot of activities. I had a lot of friends, of course. And I had a very positive high school experience.
And you had lots of sighted friends.
Yes. There was actually one other kid in my hometown who was blind, who I went all through school with, who I knew.
Mm.
But he was the only kid in the town. So, yeah, most of my friends were sighted.
And did you do some debate?
I didn't do debate, actually. We didn't have a debating team. I'm trying to think. No, we didn't have a debating team in high school.
I would have thought you did.
I didn't do any debating. Oh, but I did. Okay, I just remembered this now. And this is right up your alley. We actually had, and you don't find too many schools that have them anymore, we actually had a 10-watt FM radio station.
Oh, my. I'd like to have one now.
Oh, man. And it was, I passed. This was in the days when you had to take the
FCC
test.
Yeah.
And I took the test and got my license, and I was on the air for 2 years and had a two-hour slot once a week. We had three turntables and a cart machine and a reel-to-reel tape recorder.
Really?
And I had a blast. I had a blast.
So they had like a little high school radio department where they taught?
They didn't have – actually, it wasn't a course. It was an extracurricular thing. So if you wanted to sign up, you would go and you'd talk to the guy who kind of ran the station, and he would you'd take the test, and they'd show you how to use the board, and they'd say, what slot do you want? We were on at this point – I don't know if you remember this. We initially were on like 10 hours a week, and then – the Corporation for Public Broadcasting got kind of up in arms because a lot of these high school and college stations were taking that part of the band, which was between 88 and
the public
91. Right. So they sent a petition to the FCC kind of whining, complaining, and saying, we want to change these hours so that these high school and college stations, if they want to use our frequencies, they have to stay on the air more. So a lot of the stations had to go off the air because they just didn't have the staffing.
Yeah,
to be on the air, but we actually stayed on. I think we're finally off the air now because we got bumped by another college station that had more wattage than we did. But
that wanted to use the frequency full time.
Yeah,
that's the criteria.
Yeah,
if you want to use it to full time, or if you're just going to be part time on the spectrum. So that little 10 watts was on. They put the little transmitter. They turn on, and 10 watts. If on a good day with no inversions covered, not the city, but it covered it. I mean, you could hear it if you wanted to most anywhere, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. You could hear it in the town. You could hear it in some other towns. There was actually a you'll get a kick out of this. There was
All right.
a college station at Tufts University in Medford, Mass., a couple towns away. And one of the things they got in trouble for, and they got in big trouble for this, they decided to hook their transmitter up to the railroad tracks. They used us in that.
Oh, really?
They were doing quite well.
Was this an AM?
This was an FM.
Oh, so they're using the railroad tracks as an antenna.
Yes. And I don't know how they worked it out, but they were discovered, needless to say.
And they were covering too much area, they thought?
I think they were. I think
of course, this was back when the FCC cared. This was
back before free market.
Before cell phones, before deregulation. When the FCC was at one time was a bad big brother, brother.
That's right, the funny candy company.
Yeah, I had them walk in on me twice at radio stations when I was on the air. And it freaked him out. Who is the chief engineer? Well, I am. Well, you're totally blind. Well, yes, sir, I know that probably better than you do. Well, how can you be the engineer? Well, I just am. I am by dint of the fact that I know more than anybody here. That's the only reason. But anyway, that's another story. So you worked on this. You were glad to volunteer. You had kind of gotten the radio bug even before the high school time.
Oh, I did. I was always a big listener to radio, and I never thought I was really good at it, but, you know, I liked it, and I thought it was cool, and, you know, telling my friends to listen. I mean, I had friends in, you know, a couple towns away who had pretty good antenna systems, and they could hear me and critique me and, you know, make tapes of me and stuff like that, and I had a blast. It was a great time.
I see. Was WBZ rocking and rolling at that time or not?
WBZ's been around since, I think, the 1930s. Oh, yeah, they were back then. Yeah. They were 50,000 watts. This is back in the days of, you probably remember this guy. This is back in the days of Larry Glick.
Yes.
Yes. Larry Glick was the big rage at BZ back then overnight.
Back when AM was it?
Unfortunately, now I think there's actually some other stations on their frequency. So at night they don't, I don't know.
Oh, there are. There are, but there was a time when there were only two stations in the United States at 10:30, and that was the one in Corpus Christi, Texas, which is a daytimer, to 50,000-watt daytimer. And when it signed off, you could hear WBZ at night. Of course, now, the AM band is so crowded and so messed up, you can't do anything. But at that time, AM was king, and you could hear those big stations all over the nation.
Oh, yeah. And I was a big Larry Glick fan.
Stayed up at night.
Listened to all those stories. And he's retired and living down in Florida somewhere, I think.
Okay, so you did that in high school. You were a member of the French club. Did you all just spoke French to each other, or what did you do?
We did. We spoke French to each other, and it was a way of, you know, practicing. And I, at this time, I thought that radio was what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I studied when I went off to college.
So we left high school and went to what college?
Went to Boston University.
Yeah, well, there are lots of colleges up there to choose from.
There are tons of colleges. There's a whole bunch of them. Boston's a very big college town, and but BU had a good communications program, so I went and I was a broadcast journalism major and actually a French minor. And the reason I did a French minor was because they said to me, "Well, you have to take a math or a science." I said, "Well, can I get out of that?" And they said, "Well, if you take a language, you can get out of that." And I said, "All right." So
you already knew some French.
I figured I would just kind of coast. Well, I didn't end up coasting.
Yeah.
But it was work. But it was a good program. BU's program is a little different than some of the other schools in the sense that you don't get a lot of hands-on in the equipment until probably your second or third year. The first 2 years, they want to give you a lot of liberal arts courses. So the idea, if you're going to be a journalist going out there interviewing people,
you need to know,
what's going on in the world.
Sure, and that's good.
So that's a good thing. They actually had a little carrier current radio station. I didn't join it just because I was kind of disgusted after being on the nice 10 water that I was on in high school. I said, I want to work on this little carrier current thing.
Yeah.
So. But I went through 4 years. I had a lot of friends, and as a matter of fact, my 20th reunion is next year, so I'm kind of looking forward to that.
You didn't want to work on their little carrier current radio station after being on the
big
10 water.
I was kind of a radio snob, I guess.
That's funny. That is so funny. So so you were going to go out interview people and be a newsman and be.
I thought I was going to be, you know, the next. you know, Bob Edwards or Scott Simon or something. I had, you know, grandiose dreams.
Nothing wrong with the grandiose dreams. they're good. They sustain some of us. Some of us old guys still have them even.
This is true.
We're just harmless, but we can still dream. But and so you took 4 years of this, actually got a degree in radio television or communications
It was a degree in communications. Broadcast journalism was the specialty, so I could have actually done radio or TV. I didn't do too much stuff with TV. I had a writing for radio course, which was a lot of fun. We used to write newscasts and stuff like that, and I had to take a couple of intro to journalism classes.
Yeah.
Those are always fun. You have to write obituaries and things like that.
They didn't teach you. Did they teach you how to write commercials? They did. Do they do that?
No, I didn't. They didn't teach me how to write commercials. And I think if I'd been in a different program, I think if I'd been in probably the PR and advertising program that I would have learned how to write spots and all that kind of stuff. That would have been a good thing to know.
I think it would. I think a blind person, if you're in the right circumstances with it, where the internet is now, you could actually work at home. I'd like to have a job as a copywriter.
Yeah.
Now that I can type.
Yeah.
That's
the other thing. You know, I got to tell you, just as an aside, this is funny. I learned to type when I was 9 because the idea was that so I could type my papers for class, because obviously most of my teachers were sighted, so they didn't read Braille. So when I got to college, the thing that amazed me, being in a journalism program, was how many people that were in this program with me that couldn't type. And it was funny, you know, at 2 in the morning, the people would be up, and, you know, they'd be working on the papers, and you'd hear, you know, clink, 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 you know, just one letter at a time, just typing, hunting and pecking on the keyboard,
and
I was typing away at 60 words a minute, you know.
You could type like a fool.
I was 9. So.
Yeah, you'd think that that public schools would make kids learn to type. It's a necessary skill these days.
Oh, it really is.
So what do you figure these kids did their, I guess, did their high school homework in longhand?
Exactly, and a lot of kids... I had friends who actually were good typists, who actually people would pay them to type their papers. That was a big industry at college.
Well, the only thing about typing as a blind person on a Smith Corona or Underwood or whatever, old manual typewriter, is you knew you were typing, but you didn't know if you were doing anything. You didn't know if you were doing any good. Of course, you could set the margins and you could do all those things. But, you know, I'm sure that there's blind people I think we talked to one girl that said she typed a whole, you know, big 10-page thing, and somebody finally told her that the ribbon wasn't.
It was set in the wrong. That happened to me many times. Or you get halfway through a paper and it'll be fine, then all of a sudden it would just fade and you'd have to retype the rest of it. And, of course, the thing is... particularly when I had English classes in college, it was really, I was doing double duty, because they wanted to see your draft as well as your finished copy.
Okay.
So what I would have to do is I would braille up my draft, then I would type that up, then I would type up the final draft. So it was... I was doing kind of double the work.
It was a hard way to do things.
It was a hard way to do things, but that was, you know, that was what they wanted to
see. So you'd have to read a line of Braille and then type that line.
Exactly.
And then read,
exactly.
Get out of town. It would be terrible.
And I'm a pretty good Braille reader. I mean, and I pulled many. Boy, that's the thing about college I don't miss, was pulling all-nighters to get papers done.
Yeah, now we've got those wonderful computers, and just type away. That would be a hard way. I admire anybody who've got through college doing it the Braille way and with the manual typewriters.
It was. I actually had an electric, so in that sense, it was pretty good. So it was a little bit easier, but yeah, in terms of that, and of course, you'd still have to have somebody proofread the paper for you. you know, to make sure that you...
But if you inadvertently misspelled a word, you were screwed.
Yeah,
because there was
nothing.
You got
a phone call in the middle of you were doing something and you forgot where you left off.
You were in trouble. You were in trouble. You were SOL. Because if you misspelled a word or you put too many letters in a word, too many T's, if you put three T's at the end of something, there's nothing you could do about it except start over.
Exactly.
So you had to be extremely accurate and extremely careful. My personality, I couldn't have done it because I'm always checking. I check everything. If I, when I lock a door, I go check it two or three times just to make sure. I'm just one of those. It would have just driven me nuts. I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So I sold brooms.
It can be pretty crazy.
It would be pretty crazy. Let's take our second little break, and then we'll come back and talk about what you did after you got out of, because obviously you went looking for radio jobs. You wouldn't have gotten a degree if you didn't want one, right?
Right, right.
All right, back in just a minute with more of this week's Blind Like Me. Hang on. Blindsight. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blindsight, here's Don Shaw.
I want to talk today about a site that a listener to the Blind Like Me show named Chrissy sent us. It's NHEST, which stands for Natural History and Science Education. It's a really fine outdoor type site for the outdoor enthusiast. You can sit at your computer and you can take a virtual tour of some nature trails with all the sounds of birds and different things that one might encounter along the way of walking along this nature trail. Several virtual nature trails, in fact, on the site. It's a great site full of just lots of really, really super information. If you have any interest in the outdoors and hearing the different sounds along the trail, go and take the virtual tour. Go to www.nhest.org. And, of course, I'd have to give this one a blind friendliness rating of a 10. Until next time, I'm Don Shaw. Keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight.
Back with portion three, Blind Like Me, Tim Cummings, our guest from Boston. But you have no Boston accent, I meant to mention while I'm
here. Well, maybe that's just all my years in radio training. I don't know. I did when I was a little kid, but I lost it. But part of that was because my parents never really had a Boston accent. So.
Well, you don't seem to have, compared to click and clack.
No, I don't say ka, although I can. I can say ka and have it yad.
Yeah.
And hoss, riding a hoss. But
It's car talk. It's not car talk.
It's not car talk.
Car talk. I listened to it this morning, as a matter of fact. I taped it from NPR yesterday and listened to those boys this morning. They're on vacation, so it was an old show. But they have a neat way of doing old shows. You really can't tell. I think they mix several calls together.
I think they do. In fact, I've got a couple of their CDs.
I noticed the other day for the first time that they sing on some of the CDs.
Oh, wow.
So actually, there was a duet that they, something they played the other day as one of the little break tunes, and it was obvious that it was, Tom and Ray Malyansi.
Oh, that's great.
Singing, so that's good. I guess, everybody can sing a little bit, or most people can.
Exactly.
So anyway, you're in Boston, but you don't have a Boston accent, which is, I suppose, good, but you got a degree in... communications or radio TV or whatever they called it, what it was their terminology for it, minor in French.
Yes, sir.
So, you got out of college. This was, so you're born in 61, 62?
63. So I got out of college in
85. So, it was mid-80s and time for young Tim Cummings to find a job. What'd you do?
Well, I didn't kind of know what I knew I kind of wanted to get into broadcasting, but I wasn't sure really what I wanted to do. So I took a year off, and in that year off, I took a computer course because I figured I'd want to learn about adaptive computers, because this is when the adaptive computers were just first coming out. The Apple IIe was around, and I'm sure we talked about that last night. You remember?
Yeah, we had one. I didn't have any voice for it, but we had one.
Yeah, and so then I decided. I think I want to go back to school. And after getting all this work in radio, I was interested when I'd been in college. I'd taken a couple courses in religion. And so I became interested in theology, of all things.
Okay.
And I said, well, maybe I want to go back to school and maybe go on and get my doctorate and teach, or maybe even go into ministry.
Really?
And people joked with me because they said, well, you're gonna be the left-wing Jimmy Swaggart or what? What's the deal?
Because you're there in Teddy Kennedy country.
Yes.
There are no, Jesus loves me, but he hates your brother because he's gay.
That's right.
That kind of stuff, you know?
So I applied to Boston University. Actually has a very good theology program, and I applied, and I got in. And this was so I applied to get a master's in theological studies.
Whoa!
And it was great. It was I met people from all different Christian backgrounds, and I studied some theology and philosophy, and had a really good time, and I actually was able. I actually got to do some preaching, which was kind of fun.
I had some
friends of mine who were, pastors at local churches who let me preach at their churches, and that was a blast. But I decided that after going through all this, that I didn't want to. Number one, I didn't want to go into ministry because I liked preaching, but it wasn't something I wanted to do every week. And I decided that I didn't have the stamina to go on and get a PhD because I would have to do that. I would probably have had to learn German. And I started learning German. And I don't know if you've ever taken any German, but Braille German is very difficult. It's much more contracted than English Braille.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got through that degree.
Back up just a second. Why would you have had to learn German? I'm lost there.
Well, because probably to get a PhD, a lot of the theologians were German theologians, and so you'd want to be able to read them in the original texts in the original German. And you need to get a PhD most of the time in this kind of field. You need to have a language.
Well, you had French.
I had French, but that's true. But it wasn't French was not the language of theology. German was the language of theology.
You had the French, yes, you did. I guess they didn't figure
a language of theology and philosophy.
Okay, I can see that. But he didn't want to do the German. Now, were they espousing a particular religion or just general theology?
BU was it is linked with the United Methodist Church.
Okay.
Well,
they're pretty liberal.
Of course, I was more liberal because I'm a Unitarian.
Yeah.
They didn't kind of know what to make of me.
So you're the guy that goes around burning question marks on people's lawns, right?
Exactly.
You're that guy.
So they didn't know what to make because I was, in some ways, I was more theologically liberal than a lot of my classmates, but not necessarily as politically liberal. So they didn't know what to make of me. So they couldn't figure me out. And, I'd say to my New Testament professor, I'd say to him in his office, during the day, one day I'd say, who is the real Jesus? And we got into a big discussion about this, why do we need the Trinity and all this kind of stuff? And
they don't
this,
like that.
Radical stuff, which
they don't like that.
No, you're not supposed to ask.
You're supposed to just take it on faith and... Garrison told this joke. He said that he joined a group called the Uniterrorists. And like I said a while ago, they went around burning big question marks in people's lawn. I thought, this is funny. But you can't tell that on the job because people don't get it. They don't.
No.
I told them, I'm going to tell this joke till somebody laughs, and nobody ever has. You know?
No, because, you know, that's right. So I was in a, I was kind of a fish out of water, but I had a good time.
Yeah, they don't want you to question. They don't want to be asked. You know, if we take parts of the Bible literally, don't we have to take the whole thing literally? Because if we did, we'd be cutting off people's hands for drinking too much.
Exactly.
There'd be a lot of things we'd be doing. They talk
right.
about the Bible is against gays and gay marriage. Jesus loves me, but he doesn't love you because you're gay.
Exactly.
Exactly. There's something wrong with that, folks. Wrong.
Maybe you should start I tell you, it's very interesting, though, because you could get... you know, there's a lot of you should start a blind like religion show.
You think blind like religion?
You could have some interesting discussions. I'll tell you.
Oh, I want to steer. I'm anti organized religion. I'm against it.
So you want to steer?
I think it causes more problems than it solves. I'm a serious believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, if that's what we want to call him. I'm a believer in God, but I eschew organized religion. I don't like it. I think it's you know, they're like the Baptists are against the gays. Well, why?
Well, yeah, only certain Baptists. So
only certain Baptists.
You're not in Texas, which is Southern Baptist country.
Yeah, the difference in Southern Baptists and Northern Baptists. You know, Dave Gardner, what did he say? The Northern Baptists say there ain't no hell. Southern Baptists say the hell they ain't.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the difference. So, you decided that just a question. Were your parents pushing this? Are they religious?
My parents aren't religious at all. I mean, they were fine with it, but no, they weren't pushing it at all. You know, they said, you know, whatever you want to do. They're not religious. My parents are very liberal.
I'm just trying to hearken because my mother would have loved for little Phil or my brother or one of us to have been a preacher. She just thought that's what she wanted. And, of course, when I wanted something, I satisfied her by telling that's what I was going to do so I could get her to buy me some cigarettes or something. That's just that kind of stuff. So you went, but you didn't get the degree in theology.
No, I did. I got the degree in theology, but I did get it.
That's a four-year degree or what?
It was a master's in theological studies, but I decided not to go on and do. I decided not to go on for a PhD, and I decided not to go on and do preaching. So I got out of school, and I was out of school for a couple of years, and of course now I didn't know really what I wanted to do because I really hadn't done any of the broadcasting stuff, and so I was looking around for a job. And then I got a call from my counselor one day. I went through a program to kind of assess your job skills and, you know, your talents and so on and so forth. And I went through this whole program, and I said, well, customer service, that's something I could probably do. So I came up with a whole, you know, resume and so on and so forth. And I got a call from my counselor at the commission, and he said, we've got this Boston Edison is interested in hiring a blind person, and, you know, there's this possible job. Would you be interested? And I said, sure. And I faxed over my resume, and they looked at it, and they liked it. And the guy who hired me, the only thing he was worried about, he said, is, well, geez, you know, he's probably not going to stay with this job because he's so overqualified that, you know, he's... we'll give him a try. And, so they hired me, and I've been there 11 years. So.
But you have a degree in they call it a degree in theology or a degree in, what do they call it?
I have a degree in theology. I have a bachelor's degree in journalism, and I have a master's degree in theology.
And you're doing neither.
And I'm doing neither, but in a way you could say I'm doing both because I'm ministering to customers.
You're talking using communication skills,
yes.
Which you were very good at. You have your enunciation is good. You have a very nice ready laugh, which I look to people that people who don't laugh, I don't want to be around.
Well,
you know?
Need listen in a customer service job, you need a nice ready laugh sometimes.
You do. I'd hate to do it. I'd tell a lot of people where to get off, I guess, and get in trouble. It's a good thing I do what I do, isn't it? No one supervises me or.
That's right.
I just never was one to take orders. It's just terrible. That's why I'm where I am. But here's the thing, and so you got this job, and let's talk about your activities at night now. You stated in when you wrote me that you were the host or the master or the what do you do for these at night?
I'm a webmaster of two websites. Can I give the
sure? Give anything you want to.
Okay. One of them is www.vibug.org, and this is our local computer users group here in Boston, Blind Computer Users Group. We've been in existence for over almost 15 years, and we have a meeting once a month where we all get together and we demo some new piece of computer equipment. And what I do is I'm the webmaster for the website, and I also record the meetings and on mini disc and then put them up on the website so that people who can't get to them can go and listen to the past meetings online and hear the demos.
Oh, so they're online, just like ACB radio.
Yeah.
You have archived.
Yep, archived. And we're not live streaming yet, but we're hoping to do that. So that's one of the sites that I manage and do the audio recording for that.
Okay, let's don't move from that in just a second. And what kinds of pieces? Like last month, what did you demonstrate?
Let me think now. What did we do last month? We didn't have a demo last month. The last demo that we had that's up there is we had the new Nokia accessible cell phone, cell phone that's up there.
Okay.
And which is pretty keen. Cool thing to have.
And that's going to be out and available early 2005. Oh, is it next month?
Yeah, this month. In August. It's supposed to come out in August. Yeah. Singular is supposed to release a model.
And what do you have any idea what they're going to be priced for?
I think it's going to cost $300, but that includes the software. And the phone and the software.
And it will do many things that you can't do now, like you can look over your phone number list.
You'll be able to do text messaging. You'll be able to tell if your battery's low on your phone.
If somebody calls me, if I got a missed call, can I read that number?
Yep. It'll be able to do all that.
Oh, see, that's for $300. It costs more than it should. There's no question about that. But you got to remember, there's not too many of us, and there's not going to be too many people who are going to want one of those, and to, you know, it costs them something to build it, and spring for the bucks, get one.
Exactly.
And so you do every month. Give me some ideas. Like you've done Braille and Speak.
We've done Braille and Speak. We've done the Braille. We've done the PacMate, the Braille Note. We've done. We haven't done the latest version of JAWS yet. We got to get around to doing that. I think. I'm trying to think.
So this is main menu with an attitude.
This is main menu. This is kind of a local version of main menu, but we concentrate on one product instead of main menu doing three or four things. We just do one and focus on that for the whole hour and a half demo.
Now give us the URL again, because people are going to want to go check
this
out.
It's www.vibug.org. Visually Impaired Blind Users Group, and I'm the webmaster, so I can say this to Mr. Shaw.
Yeah.
If he looks at it, he should give it a screen reader friendly rating of a 10, because it's very accessible.
Well, we're going to see that he goes and reviews it. Trust me. We'll see. I'll tell him about it Tuesday when I see the boy. That's very good. Vibug.org.
Yes,
that's one that you look at, and this has all sorts of reviews of equipment. What's the other one, sir?
The other site is blindcitizens.org, www.blindcitizens.org, and I'm the webmaster for that site. And this is a nonprofit organization which, among other things, gives scholarships to blind people who are looking to get any kind of technology device. And they also have an interview program that they do where they interview people, a different guest every month, and I put those up on the net. So I'm the webmaster of that site as well and do some of the audio production for them.
Now, what is at this site? What can you find at this site?
You can have, well, they've got a couple things. They've got a monthly kind of radio show that's done, which is an interview with a one or two different kind of the guests. They've got a newsletter that comes out four times a year, which has a lot of resources in it, articles, people who are looking for different places, for example, money to get scholarships for college. They've got a lot of resources about that.
Okay.
And a lot of good information out there. They also, one of the other fun things they're doing, and actually they're playing this week, they have a beat baseball team here in Boston that I used to play for, which I'm not playing for anymore, but they're out this week at the World Series, which is out in Columbus.
Well, really?
Ohio.
And you played, but you think you've gotten too old.
Yeah, I played for a couple of years, but I just decided it was too much.
And you're 41 years old, you know.
Yeah,
you're liable to
get some older people on the team, but I decided, no.
You're liable to get hurt.
Not running around for me.
Well, sir, we've run just almost completely out of time, but I want to say this. You were very easy to talk to, very relaxed for me, and I enjoyed it, and I think everybody else will. And I'm looking forward to shaking your hand and sitting down and doing some serious visiting with you in November, sir.
Well, it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it as well, Phil.
And I think it's going to be great fun. And you need to tell your wife now that you, John Conley and I, will have our Plex Talk units there. And you don't want to feel left out or anything.
I'll put that bug in
her ear. You might mention that to her. instead of a, how about if I don't buy any microphones for your ear, babe? How about if we...
That's right.
Yeah, because you're a mic buyer. I know that.
Oh, I am. I'm going to bring some of them to show.
All right.
So.
Well, you do that, and I'll look forward to meeting you in November. Our guest has been Tim Cummings from Boston. Thank you, sir, and we'll talk with you.
Thank you, Phil.
What a delightful fellow he was. Tim Cummings from Boston. He will be with us in November at our gathering. Reminder again. Phone number 634-9500 is my number, and I'm home most of the time. You might, I don't have an answering machine, so if I don't answer, it's because I'm not here. I'm kind of a home guy. Hang around the house a lot. So give me a call if you're interested in going. You can email me at philparr@txucom.net. That's philparr@txucom.net, and I'll answer you and give you more details and send you a thing that I've written that gives most of the information about what we're doing, the 100th Blind Handyman Show. Just an excuse to get together and visit a little bit, and we hope you'll come and be with us. We'd love to have you. That's November 5th, 6th, 7th. Go home on the 8th. Call me 936-634-9500. Love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. More Blind Like Me.